from the Star Reynolds Sports Desk, your 93.3 KJRFM Sports Headlines.
All righty, boys and girls, here we go. Headlines on a Friday afternoon, day two of the NFL Draft from the VMAC, brought to you by our friends at VenueKings.com.
Keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Are you looking for tickets for the Kraken Sharks tonight, by the way? Be sure and jump on the web. Use code Sofia at checkout at VenueKings.com. So again, day two from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. Seahawks up at 40-41 in the second, 72-3 after grabbing offensive tackle Charles Cross out of Mississippi State at number 9 yesterday. Tampa Bay will start the second round at pick number 33 at 4 o'clock this afternoon.
M's open up a 3-game set in Miami tonight. Matt Brash, the start. The Mariners have sent a letter to Major League Baseball outlining what they believe has been unfair treatment by the umpires towards rookie Julio Rodriguez, who has now been called out on 10 third strikes outside the strike zone.
You think the letter will work? Huh?
No.
And baseball was like, you know, we really weren't going to do anything, but now we have this letter, so we might want to get involved here a little bit, make something happen. Big trades in the NFL yesterday. Titans sending wide receiver A.J. Brown to Philadelphia, who promptly signed into a 4-year, $100 million deal with $57 million guaranteed. And Ravens sent wide receiver Marcus Hollywood Brown to the Cardinals for the number 23 pick in the draft and a third rounder.
NBA playoffs tonight with just one game. T-Wolves try to stay alive. They host Memphis with the Grizz up 3-2.
And the Kraken tonight in the, can we call it the penultimate game of inaugural campaign?
Yes, you can.
Against the Sharks tonight, 7 o'clock faceoff, 6:30 pregame, and then Winnipeg Sunday to wrap it up at 11 a.m. on your home for Kraken Hockey, Sports Radio 93.3 KJR-FM.
And here we go.
The Seattle Seahawks select.
Seattle's best NFL draft coverage starts now. Coming to you live from the VMAC. This is the 2022 NFL Draft. All brought to you by Hunt Services, Lakeland Village Golf Course, Hendrickus Organics, and by Chambers Bay Distillery. Now, our coverage of the NFL Draft on Seattle's sports leader, Sports Radio 93.3, KJR-FM.
All right, day two of the NFL Draft continues right here on Sports Radio 93.3, KJR-FM, live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. We are underway, hanging out all night long. Ian Furness, Jason Puckett, Rob Ring, the whole gang will be along later on this afternoon, but let's face it, kind of the warm-up act, right, for the main event coming up later tonight. We're the pregame show, baby. Softy, Dick Fain, Mike Holmgren, Hugh Millen, the boys are back together again. Mike will be with us until 4 o'clock today, and one of your former players will be joining us in about a half hour from now. If I would have asked you 15, 20 years ago, who is the last guy that you think would come on the radio and talk about a Seahawks draft pick in 2022, it may have been Walter Jones. And he's doing it today with us at 3:30.
He has blossomed into quite a speaker after not having said anything to me for 9 years.
That's right. That's right. I honestly think what happened is that Walter retired and said, hey, look, my mouth. Had no idea he even had one until his career came to an end. Well, let's just go around the room, guys, and talk about where we're at right now. Well, you got one quarterback taken yesterday in the draft, and that was hometown guy Kenny Pickett going to the Pittsburgh Steelers. You had the Lions grabbing the hometown star Aiden Hutchinson from the Michigan Wolverines yesterday. Trevon Walker goes number one overall to Tennessee. And how about this? The Hawks don't do anything. They stand pat, and they actually use their pick at number 9 just the exact same way the Pete Carroll, John Schneider era began in 2010, Mike, when they took an offensive lineman named Russell Okung. They stand pat, and they took one at number 9 yesterday.
I really like that. And we talked about it yesterday, that if he's there, if the player is there, you take them. You don't move. As much as they like to move around and have moved around over the years. So they needed an offensive lineman. It was an absolute need. And this young man, I think, is really a good player. And I think they were getting excited because they weren't sure he was going to be there.
Right.
And then as things fell in the earlier picks, he was there. And I think it's a great pick for them.
PFF had him number 3 on their board overall, by the way. How about that?
Yeah, no, I think it's great. And I think – I don't want to speak for Mike, but because Sean Alexander had 28 rushing touchdowns, once set an NFL record, if I have the numbers right. But is it fair to say you're somewhat of a quarterback-centric coach, right?
That's fair.
And so,
that's fair.
So for to have a left tackle who's considered the premier pass blocking left tackle. Some questions about his running proficiency relates to his size. I was just talking to Steve Hutchinson out in the hallway, and 315, where Charles Cross is, that's exactly the weight that he said he was when he got drafted. Of course, that's one generation, 20 years ago, guard-tackle difference, but he 315 somehow is light now, right, for a tackle. And yet, Mike, he had the 20 reps in the bench press, which was low for an offensive tackle. That's like 24th percentile, guys. But he has power that you see with his twitchiness. All the athleticism that shows up in his feet shows up in his power when he punches guys. And so when I think of whether or not he can be a good run blocker, I think he has the athleticism. I think he has the power. If not the strength, he has the power that he should be able to be just fine in the running game.
I think so, too. And you get the guy because he can pass block in this league now. And then he'll become a better run blocker. He didn't have to do it much in college.
I felt like a fish out of water last night because normally my default is to try to defend John Schneider and Pete Carroll for their wacky draft pick, right? Because Seahawk fans are just like, oh, here they go. Well, they did it again. They took a guy that we've never heard of. They took a guy that was supposed to be 30 picks later than what they picked. And I usually find myself saying, wait a second, John Schneider and Pete Carroll have a pretty damn good track record. In fact, if you look at the last 10 years, they're actually number one in DVOA. Now, that takes into account that unbelievable 2012 draft, so that skews a little bit, obviously. But I trust them on draft day. I was a fish out of water yesterday, guys, because I didn't have to defend anybody because everybody across the country was like, hey, great pick. Nice job, guys. It's amazing. And now we look ahead to this 40th and 41st pick. And just for a second today, I was like, Malik Willis is still there. But then I looked at the teams ahead of Seattle. And every team ahead of Seattle, really, either needs a quarterback right this second or they're going to need a quarterback very, very soon because, like, the Vikings, how long are they going with Cousins? The Buccaneers, how long are they going with Brady? So he's not going to be there at 40. The Seattle would really have to try to move up.
You know, in deference to my age, Dick, before we go any farther, what's DVOA? What does that mean?
Yes, well, that's a – it's an analytic. The
you know
PFF,
what that is, by the way?
I think so. A bunch of little guys with glasses
running
around.
The pro football.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
So basically.
Nerds. He's talking about nerds.
The pro football focus guys put a value on the careers of every draft pick.
Okay.
And the Seahawks draft picks, accumulative draft picks, had the highest number of any team in the NFL. Obviously 2012 with Bobby Wagner and Russell Wilson skews that number. You take out that year, and they're obviously number one. But even without that year, they're still a very solid drafting.
Well, thank you. I'm sorry, Dave.
No, you're no good. I mean, it's all. I mean, the more education I think we can get here, the better. But I mean, to back to your point about the run blocking versus the pass blocking. You know, look, this is a throwing league, right? I think we all understand that. Even the average team, and I'm looking at last year, the Washington Commanders back then, they were the Washington Football Team, threw it 550 times. Last season. That's middle of the pack. At the end of the line in pass attempts last year was Philadelphia at 494 pass attempts, and the Hawks were at 495. So even the low end in the NFL are throwing the ball 50% of the time on the plays they run during a football game. So you got to have a guy that can pass block first versus run block second. My question is, how easy will it be to coach this guy up? And then second of all, who's going to coach him? Andy Dickinson is your brand new offensive line coach. He's never been an offensive line coach in that role until this year. He's the guy.
Well, you know, you hire a guy to do exactly that. Can he communicate with the player? You know, I've always said this with coaches. Okay, you know, you learn, you're a teacher, okay, you're going to do this, but it's my job to get that guy, the player, to be the best he can be. Now, how do you do that? And obviously, you know, Pete has a lot of faith in Andy, and we'll just have to see how it works. But I've got a lot of confidence in him, and I think learning to be – he's an aggressive guy.
Yeah.
You know, he was talked about this. So now he's just got to learn some new techniques because he didn't do it that much in college.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't have to. They threw the ball almost all the time.
Yeah. Hugh, how about some thoughts on that?
Well,
that was a concern for some people yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's a concern because if you're a top 10 tackle and you say, well, okay, why was he the third and not the first? I think that the other guys were bigger men, right? He had 20, 30 pounds on him, and they had shown more just, you know, that mauling ability in the running game. And that's why I thought perhaps Seattle would be reluctant because they want to get back to the running game, right? But I would think, Mike, that it's just easier, as we talked about, to transition and to be able to coach that running game and that running aspect of him. But I want to ask you about – he's a shade under 6'5". There's a lot of offensive tackles that have gone north of 6'6" and what have you. But, I never looked up what Walter's height was. I feel like he's about my height at 6'5". He was not – the giant, in terms, and can't that help in the run blocking with your leverage in terms of, okay, 6'5" is not a small man, but by left tackle standards, it is small. I mean, he's in the 29th percentile in height.
I think it not only helps in that, it also helps in his set for passes. He's not real high. Those other guys have to, you got to bend your knees, you got to move, you got to do all that kind of stuff. I think he's going to be fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'd much rather have I'd give athleticism a nod before size. And if he's not 250 pounds,
yeah,
he's 315 pounds,
yeah,
and he's 6'5". So that's plenty big enough.
And you look at the best – I was a little bit worried about the weight originally, but I'm looking at the best linemen in the NFL, the David Bakhtiaris, Trent Williams, Tron Armstead, Laremy Tunsil. They're all between 305 and 318. I mean, he is like right in the window. Those guys I just mentioned, the lows 305, the highs 318 for those guys. So does he even need guys to put on 10 to 12 more pounds, or do you like him where he is?
No, I think he'll have to figure that out. They will figure that out, because now you not only have the analytic people, but you have all these scientists in there talking about what they're going to eat and chips and all this kind of stuff. And then they will figure out the right weight and what it should be and how he can function. But he's got to be careful. You know, I mean, just to say he's got to be 20, put on 20 pounds. No. Let's just see how he reacts and how he does, and then they'll figure that out.
One aspect, guys, I think the inside guys, the guards, the centers, they have to have more power because they're blocking heavier guys. But there's more kind of processing in both the passing game, the running game, the stunts, the things that are coming. I think when you're a little bit farther removed, Mike, when you're out there at the left tackle, you know, you look at the play sheet and you say, okay, who do I block on this on stretch? Oh, I got the end. I got an end zone zone. I got the end. You know, I mean, like
is that an actual play sheet, by the way?
Well, this is actually the draft list, and I was going to add that to Dick's comment that you had Cam Chancellor in 2010, you had Richard Sherman in 2010.
In 2012, you mean? Yeah,
11.
No, but the thing is, to your point,
yeah.
And when Walter comes on, ask him.
Yeah.
Because you ask Steve Hutchinson or Toback or any of those guys, they were doing all these calls inside.
Yeah.
And Walt says, I got this guy.
I got the end.
You guys, go do that. I got this guy.
Leave me alone. Right.
Yeah. Right.
And
right.
It's not that simple, but it's close to it.
By the way, that was totally my fault. I threw you off your game. I'm sorry. I thought you had an actual play sheet, which would surprise nobody sitting here if he actually had a play sheet.
He doesn't need it. It's all here. He doesn't need it.
Yeah. So I threw him off his game. But I mean, look, I mean, this is a need position with one of the premier players at his position in college football. And it's funny because people talk about, well, he's a great, he's apparently an elite pass blocking prospect, but not as good in the run game. Well, that doesn't mean he stinks as a run blocker. It just means between the other two guys, he may not be as good.
I don't think you saw enough in the run game.
Right.
Because they didn't do it.
Right.
It was like some of our linemen at BYU when I was coaching there. We didn't run. We ran four different plays. Every other, it was a passing. That's what they did.
Right.
But a lot of those guys could come into the league and be very, very good offensive linemen.
How about two-point stance versus three-point stance, though? Ray Roberts mentioned that being a bit of a concern.
He probably has to move it. But we've also seen guys from a two-point stance run the ball. Mm-hmm. They run the ball from guys with a two-point stance. So if he has to learn some of those things. I think your point is well taken. Yeah.
So just real
you
quick,
have to learn some of that
last
stuff.
Year, this will surprise nobody with the air raid, Mississippi State threw the ball 704 times, and they ran it 270.
Yeah.
Okay. So
yeah, and of those
3-1.
Yeah. And he had 101 snaps on the inside zone. He had 61 snaps on outside zone, but just 6, Mike, on power and counter. And
wow.
Dick and Dave, the simplest way I can say this is take your hands and put it like you're on a typewriter. Okay. Now
you want me doing this?
I want you to do this too. Yeah, yeah. Take your hands like you're.
Come on.
No, Mike knows everything I'm about to say. So like you're on a typewriter. Okay. Now take your hands and move both of them to the left. Okay. You just did zone blocking left. Okay. Now there's details in outside zone and inside zone. But now take both your hands like you're on a typewriter. Now cross them over at each other. Now you just did gap scheme blocking. Okay. At the play side, you're blocking down and you're bringing one or two guys from the backside. So what I'm saying is that Charles Cross, he did all of the zone blocking.
Right.
And none of the gap scheme. And most every team in the NFL, Seattle, even with different multiple offensive line coaches, yeah, you might say, well, we're primarily a zone team, but you're going to run those power encounters because they're to cross up the defense. So some of that aspect of evaluating him, you don't get to see him on some of those down blocks where you have favorable leverage that you tend to see in the gap scheme power encounter, Mike.
That's exactly right. And those are types of things that tackles, athletic guys who play tackle can learn if you haven't done it a lot.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. He's a big, strong man.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and so, you know, the angle come down and angle block, he'll like that. He'll like that kind of stuff.
By the way, just to eliminate confusion, your fingers represent the five offensive linemen. I know you have 10 fingers, but your right hand is the right side of the offensive line. Your left hand is the left side off of the lines. When you cross them, that's kind of what is happening in gap scheme block.
So you're saying potentially it's a positive, even though he hasn't done it before, because his skill set is such that you think he might be an even better gap scheme blocker than we may think that because he's so athletic.
Yeah, anytime he has to move far from where he is, he's going to be better than other guys because he's a better athlete with his feet. And while he may not be the biggest guy, I think he has power. Power, what I was told by his strength coaches is power is strength over time, right? So he only had the 20 bench press, but that's not representing his power. That's representing his strength. His power is what you see on tape.
Right.
When you see him take his hand and jab a defensive end and that just kind of shocks him, then you say, okay, that's a powerful hand. And that shows up in run blocking. That shows up in pass blocking. So what I'm here to say, Mike, is that the guy has the athleticism. He has the feet. And he has the temperament. And he has the power. If not the strength, he has the power to be effective and to be a physical player because of those attributes.
I'm with you all the way.
How many accidents did he just cause on the freeway from people that are rapidly moving their hands to the left and
crossing
them over?
Yeah, they're driving the steering wheel.
Cop says, what were you doing? Well, Millen told me to move my hands over to the left, and I went in the other lane and hit a truck. I don't know what's going on. Hugh Millen, Dick Fain, Mike Holmgren, Dave Softy Mahler from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center, and then pick it up on what Dick was talking about. The Hawks are on the clock right now at number 40. Second round will begin at 4 o'clock with the Buccaneers, and again, a team that could be looking for Tom Brady's replacement. What do you want to come out of with today? I mean, Mike and I were joking. Is it really in their DNA to go 2-3 rounds in a row and not make one move?
Well, I would say the first thing that I think of is they're having a pretty significant change in their defense. They're going to go to a true 3-4, and that means that the defensive ends are going to be what's called four techniques. They're going to be right over the tackles, and they're going to be two-gapping type of players. They're not going to be the twitchy up-the-field defensive ends. They are going to be hybrid defensive tackle type guys. Their nose tackle has got to be a big dude who can two-gap, all right? And so now the pass rushing is going to come from the linebackers who are going to be in two-point stances. So some of the guys that we talk about, edge rushers, if you've only seen a guy in a 40 front, a four-man front with his hand in the ground, it's not to say that he can't transition, but you've got an extra layer in your scouting profile to try and see, okay, do we think that he can be a guy that can be a little bit wider in a two-point and play that outside linebacker? So we're going to have – we're going to have Jordan Brooks as the middle linebacker, and we're going to have Cody Barton as the wheelbacker.
But
in a 3-4, the way they do it, they have very similar responsibilities. Certainly in the pass game, both have the hook zones, Mike. In terms of gaps and how they have to take on guard, there's a similarity between those two inside linebackers. But the defensive ends and the outside linebackers, I think that's something they have to address today from a scheme fit standpoint on that front seven.
No question. The outside guys in that defense, if they can, if you find a player who can rush the passer, drop into coverage, and then kind of take it, be a tough run stopper, pick him.
Yeah.
Grab him right now because that's the defense he's going to play. You and I talked about it yesterday, Dave, where that guy, he could be a stand-up linebacker, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden you shift the line just slightly, and then he steps up, and he's a down guy. Mm-hmm. So he's his hand's in the dirt, or maybe not in the dirt, but he's pass rushing.
Right.
That means then they kick coverage a certain way. So there's a lot of moving parts to this. I still think, though, if you're asking me, if you got the guy at 40, take him.
Right.
Take this guy.
Well, it could be higher than that. Josina Anderson is saying the Seahawks have placed exploratory calls about moving up in the draft tonight, per sources, and it takes two to tango, so we'll see. I mean, the kid from Georgia, N'Kobe Dean, maybe you like him as a pure pass rusher. Who knows? The Booth kid, the cornerback, is still out there as well. They can make a move for him, so lots of possibilities here. The Hawks are sitting there at 40 and 41 and 72 in round three as of now. We'll get a break. Walter Jones going to join us. Give us his thoughts on the newest member of the Seahawk Left Tackle Club next on Sports Radio 93.3 KJR FM.
Now back to the VMAC for Seattle's best NFL draft coverage. Brought to you by Hunt Services, Lakeland Village Golf Course, Hendrickas Organics, and by Chambers Bay Distillery on Seattle's sports leader, Sports Radio 93.3 KJR FM.
He's one of the best offensive tackles in the game that has played for the Seattle Seahawks. I actually talked to him earlier. I was just trying to pick his brain, just learn from him. So I asked him advice on how he thinks of the game, how different players play, and finding a rhythm to play against other players.
That is the voice of the newest member of the Seahawks offensive line, Charles Cross, speaking, I believe, today at a press conference right downstairs from us here at the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. Softy Dick, Hugh Millen, Mike Holmgren hanging out until 6:20 tonight before pregame of the Kraken Sharks right here on 93.3 KJR FM. The boys, Ian Furness, Rob Rang, the gang, will have the rest of our coverage over on AM starting at 6:30 on 950. But joining us right now on the radio program, the guy that Charles Cross was talking about. How about that? Walter Jones with us on the program. Big Walt, how are you, pal? What's going on?
I'm doing good, man. How you doing?
We are good. Your old head coach is here. Mike's got a question for you. Go ahead, coach.
Hey, Walt, I couldn't think of anybody better for Charles Cross to talk to about how to play the position. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, coach. How you doing? I'm doing great.
I'm doing great. Listen, we banged it around a little bit, and I couldn't think of anyone better to ask this question of. Charles Cross came out of college, a dominant passing system. And so the questions were not much about his pass protection ability, but his run blocking. When someone comes from a college program that throws it as much as he came from, what kind of transition, how hard is it to get into the running blocking schemes in the NFL?
I don't think it should be hard for him. I think the thing about it, you know, now this game now is all about passing the ball now, so you're passing a lot more. But, you know, I always tell people all the time, you still, no matter how much you pass, you still got to put your hands in the dirt and come off the ball at some point throughout the game or throughout the season. So for him, it's just a matter of him just, you know, throughout the when they're doing drills, they're going to help him out on that. You know, the worst is trying to figure out how he's going to get in the three-point stand. You know, I've been watching film on him. And, you know, like you said, he's been playing pass for his whole life. So, you know, so it's kind of one of those things, like how do you teach a kid how to come out of that two-point stand to try to get in the three-point stand. So I think it should be fine. You know, if he's been playing offensive lineman, he should be able to get in the three-point stand. But it should be something to see. But still, again, you know, in this league now, you've got to be able to pass protect.
Well, I was going to ask you that. That was the second question I had about the two-point stance versus a three-point stance. When you came out of college, your team threw the ball a lot, didn't you? Did you run both? I mean, now it's different because a lot of guys never get in the three-point stance. Is that a big deal?
It's a totally big deal. You know, I came from the era where it was like you had to be in a three-point stance. Only time you get in a two-point stand was on third down if it was third and long. But, you know, nowadays it's all, you know, now in the coaching, like as the coaches, the offensive linemen that I played for came along, you know, they started understanding guys could do the job, get the job done. you know, in a 2-point stand or a 3-point stand. But still, like I said earlier, you at some point, you know, the game is over and you need to have a 4-minute drill. You can't be in a 2-point stand. So you still have to got to find a way to implement that into his game where he got to get into a 3-point stand to come off the football. And I think he should be able to do it. I got a chance to meet him. He's a good kid, you know, a very fit looking kid too, though. So I like that about him. So I think it should be an easy process for him to come in and play as soon as he get here.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Walter Jones with us. So you started, I think, 12 games your rookie year in 97. I guess there's an assumption, Walt, that this guy comes in and starts right away at left tackle. You see any problems there at all?
I don't see no problem. I think when you get drafted that high, I think, you know, when I came in, they told me, you know, it's your job to lose. So I think they probably going to tell him the same thing, you know, coming in that high, you just got to come in. And like I told him earlier, you know, come in with blinders on and don't worry about all the critiquing. You know, you just try to get better every day and then be ready for that first game. So I think if he do that, I think he should be just fine.
Walter, Charles Heath measured at 6'4" 3/4" and at about 3'10". I looked at the combine. If they had it right, you were 6'4" 7/8". So you're basically the same size. For now, in modern football, he's at the 29th percentile in height. You see bigger, taller men at left tackle. As it pertains to both pass blocking and run blocking, that height being at 6'5" and a little bit shorter than some of the other tackles, did you find that there was any extra advantage in that? Both of you have 34.5-inch arm length, but what about the leverage and everything playing left tackle at 6'5" and a hair under 6'5"?
I think it's going to work perfect for him. For me personally, a lot of people understood that me. I haven't really checked. You know, he was more of a long torso, so I'm thinking he's more like me too, where, you know, have more of a long torso. Like some to today, people don't understand that I have a 32-inch waist, so I had great knee bands. So for him, I mean, a 32-inch length of. And so he have great knee band. So it's all about the knee band for me personally. So I think if you stay good base and knee band, he should be fine. You know, a lot of times you hear all about the long arms. And I think a lot of times with long arms, they just get you in trouble, make you want to grab outside. I said when you have the shorter arms, you can kind of keep your arms in tight and can get your punch in. So for me personally, the long arm thing, that's all that does for me, tell me, and linemen love to grab with long arms. So for me, I don't think with the short arm, the short reach is going to be a problem for him.
Well, what was the most difficult transition for you when you came into the league, and was that difficulty unique to your situation, or was it the same for most tackles?
I think it's the same for most tackles. I think the toughest part of it was just making football a job. You know, a lot of times you come from a college where everything is rolled out for you. You know, everything. You know, your bills are paid for. So for me personally, I think the hardest part for me is just becoming an adult. You know, becoming a professional. The stuff that goes on outside of the realm of playing football. I think, you know, all these kids know how to play the game of football. It's just a matter of just putting them in the right position, and they can be coachable. But I think a lot of times the thing that really shocked me was just being an adult or being a professional. Once you get to that level, you know, everything is thrown at you. And then you got to be able to get on the football field and play. You know, you come to a point where you got to buy a house, you got to pay your bills and stuff. So for me personally, I thought that was the toughest part about coming to the league, was just doing all the extra stuff that comes with, you know, being a professional.
You know, Walt, this is Coach again. When we had dinner with you guys, the linemen, before Hutch went in the Hall of Fame, I was teasing you guys and listening to Toback and all those guys saying they make all these calls and you just look over at them and say, hey, you guys call it. You guys do what you have to do. I'm taking this guy. Is it a little bit easier out there that way for a left tackle than it is, you know, because you obviously you're a part of the calls, but yeah, the inside thing is a little different, isn't it?
Oh, it's totally different. I think, you know, in your offense, it was all about what the guys in the inside did. You know, they did most of the calls and stuff like that. So for us, with me and Sean Locklear, it was easy for us, you know. And then when I first got there, you know, I came in late when I got drafted. So when I got there, the coach told me, hey, this is your job to lose. And he told me, he said, I tell tackle this all the time. I said, 95% of the time, if you didn't even listen to a play in the huddle and you got to the line of scrimmage, 95% of the time you're blocking the end. So, you know, you tell these young guys, you go in and you be with blinders, you know you're blocking the end most of the time. But then getting your playbook. For me personally, it was all about just getting into your playbook. I think a lot of times you get in your playbook, but from a standpoint, from a tackle, you know, you have to understand. I think it's more of just understanding the protection, what everybody is doing. I think once that comes to you and you understand what everybody else is doing, that makes the game so much easier, and you know what you have to do with your guy. And most of the time, you're the left tackle, so you're probably going against the best pass rusher. So you want to be on your game throughout the whole game. So for me personally, it was just, you know, telling those guys, you take care of what's going on the inside. I'm going to take care of this guy.
So you're telling me you never did listen to Tobeck. Is that what you're telling me?
Never listen to Tobeck. Still to this day, I don't listen to Tobeck.
Yeah, I mean, why would you listen to Tobeck? What's to listen to Tobeck? Hey,
you and Hutch got things handled on
exactly.
That
exactly. Walter, great stuff, man. Are you going to help out with coaching this guy at all? If the Hawks ask you, what's your role with this kid moving forward, you think?
Oh, you know what? I never, you know, the Seahawks have never done that to me. You know, they always have asked me to talk to the guys, all the guys that came through Seattle. You know, I've always opened up my phone to those guys, you know, when George Fant was here, when Jermaine Ifedi was here. You know, I always try to talk to those guys. You know, I think one thing with these kids, man, is all about just being a student of the game, learning how to study film. I think a lot of times when you're in college, it's not as detailed as it is once you get to the league where you have to know guys and how guys play on. You know, I have to learn, you know, I thought it was just blocking the guy. He's going to do the same thing on every down. And guy, I learned that guys do different things, depending, you know, and how the coaches, how they break down third down and one. This guy's going to do something different on third and two than if it's third and seven. So, you know, for me personally, I just tell these young guys to learn how to study film because, you know, things changes on the go. The coaches changes plays on the go. So I think it is all about the kid just understanding what's going on in the football field. And I like today, I told him, I said, I'm here for you, man, if you need me. I don't go searching out for these guys if they need help. You know, I look at these guys as being professionals, and they have to learn how to be a professional, but I'm there to help those guys in any way I can.
I love it. Walter Jones, great to hear your voice. Enjoy rounds 2 and 3, and we'll talk soon, man. Appreciate it, pal.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks,
you
Walter.
Got it. Walter Jones with us. We will get a break and come back with round 2 starting at 4 o'clock. Softy, Dick, Hugh, Mike Holmgren hanging out all afternoon long. The NFL draft is close to getting back underway, baby, right here on Seattle's Sports Leader, Sports Radio 93.3, KJR-FM.
Now back to the VMAC for Seattle's best NFL draft coverage. Brought to you by Hunt Services, Lakeland Village Golf Course, Hendrickas Organics, and by Chambers Bay Distillery on Seattle's Sports Leader, Sports Radio 93.3, KJR-FM.
All right, big thanks to our sponsors, Lakeland Village Golf Course, Hunt Services, Hendrickas Organics, Chambers Bay Distillery, and Half Lion Brewing Company. I would be up for the friends of ours at Chambers Bay Distillery and or Half Lion for bringing by some samples that we can enjoy during the show. I mean, they got a big old kitchen in there, but there's a problem, Mike. There's not one drop of booze in that place across the door.
Really?
Not one.
Well, that way we can stay on our game.
Yeah.
You know?
Was it that way when you were here, by the way? I know a lot of coaches have, like, mini refrigerators with beer in their office.
I don't remember.
There's a reason.
Well, Mike Holmgren's with us for one more segment. He's going to go hobnob with all the big celebrities starting at 4 o'clock. So, quarterbacks on the board. Do you want to try to find a quarterback in this second night in round 2 or round 3? You got Malik Willis. You got Ritter. You got Howell. A bunch of names are still sitting there. I mean, really, everybody except for Pickett is still sitting there on the board, and Pickett was the one guy that you liked of all the tape that you watched.
Yeah, he was the one guy, but I did like a couple other guys, too. Now, Dick and I were just talking during the break. If you know, they could take a quarterback unless if they're still a little bit uncertain about Drew Lock. If they're still not sure and commit all their things to Drew and all that kind of stuff,
yeah,
they could take a quarterback because you got to have a quarterback. And these guys, Hugh and I, when we looked at film of them, you know, we like them. And I think, you know me, I always like to get a quarterback.
Yeah.
It might be a little bit of a stretch there, but if they do it, I think it's a, you know, I'd love to still be here and kind of be involved with that.
Well,
that'd
why
be
not,
good.
Why not take one anyway, even if Locke is your guy?
No, I know. That's my point. I think if you took one, the problem is they need help in other positions, really. And so to sacrifice that pick, not sacrifices, but to use it on a quarterback when you could get a corner or maybe a defensive lineman, that'd be a hard sell.
If they were going to go quarterback And let's say all of them are available to them. Everybody who's available now. Obviously, Pickett went 20 to the Steelers. But everybody else, that's Malik Willis, that's Desmond Ridder, that's Sam Howell, that's Matt Corral. Those are thought to be the next four guys in line. Who, if you had to take one, if you were directed that way, who would you take?
You know what? It's close, and we've talked about that too. I think I like Ridder. I really like Ridder from Cincinnati. You know, he played a lot. He played four. You know, he played a lot. He's got good size. He's got. I didn't study the film like you did, Hugh, and so the accuracy part of it I know was bothering you just a little bit on inside throws.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, I liked everything else mm-hmm. about him. So I love his attitude. I love how he speaks, and you know, just. So he'd be the guy I'd take.
If the Hawks only had one second-round pick, I could totally see Coach's point of you need to fill other spots. But you can go get a corner or an edge rusher and get your quarterback with the next pick because you got back-to-back picks there. And I think it's intriguing because of what we talked about yesterday, Hugh, the fact that you're just betting on the come thinking that a quarterback is going to fall to you next year. It's not necessarily going to fall to you. They might not even be good next year as we think they are. So if you got one of those guys there, I wouldn't be at all problematic if they pulled the trigger.
All right, just like last night, your job, run downstairs, get some intel, text it back to me. All right? But I mean it.
He's
I mean
the mole.
It this time.
Be the mole.
You forgot. You ran into a glass of wine or something and forgot last night.
Every time I tell my contacts, now listen, you can tell me. I won't tell anybody.
Right, exactly.
They kind of look at me like,
thanks for doing this, man. Good stuff.
Thanks,
we'll talk next week, all right?
All right, guys.
All right,
okay,
Mike Holmgren thanks. With us. Hugh Millen sticking around. Dick Fain sticking around. We're all sticking around at the draft about to begin next on 93.3 KJR-FM.